Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're planning on betting the NFL playoffs, buckle up. Betting football's hard enough as it is. We're doing the research for you, so listen to Cash the Ticket with Mike Valeni and I. We'll be dropping new episodes for every single playoff game. And that's going to be storylines leading into it, so some good football stuff, but also the betting nuggets you're looking for. Sides, totals, trends, player props, throw those in there too. Pre-game and post-game, we're going to be all over the postseason. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
American woman, listen what I say.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Recognize the studio. Oh my gosh. It's crazy how dark it is in here. I feel like I'm doing my show outside in the middle of the night. Oh, well, it is nighttime. For anyone who's listening at this moment, it definitely is nighttime. If that helps set the mood, then I hope it works. But for me, generally, I like to be able to see my notes and see what it is that I'm doing while I'm hosting the show. Now, I'm not as extreme as some of my colleagues who will turn on or used to. I'm not sure it's available anymore. It looks as though the TV people have removed all of their extreme lighting that used to hang from some of the racks here in the ceiling for the first, 10, 11 years, maybe. We had a bunch of shows, different ones at different times, that were carried on CBS Sports Network. And so because of that, there were special TV lighting and TV cameras here in studio. Now shows that you'll see in video form are mostly carried on our network YouTube channel, which at some point we may do, maybe even just a trial basis for the rest of the 2024 calendar year. We'll see. But first things first, got to get to a new producer and then maybe we'll try some video. Anyway, the TV lighting has been removed from our main studio, and for years, the light switches were connected to the TV lighting, and I knew exactly what settings I wanted. Now, some other host would come in and would flip on all the bright white extreme lighting, and it was so bright in here, but they told me they did it because that was how they could stay awake. I don't have any issues staying awake. I just want to be able to see my papers. So it's a little bit odd. It is a bit like mood lighting in here. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Glad to be back with you after a couple days away, or a couple nights away, I suppose would be more accurate. And it was terrific to be able to spend Wednesday, when I had 90 minutes of sleep, Wednesday, then Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and most of Sunday with my mom, who was visiting from Houston for the first time in 3 years, actually. I'd seen her a ton, of course, had been doing a long-distance relationship back in Texas, had planned a wedding in Texas, had been to Texas multiple times this year, even for family weddings and other events. And so I'd been to see her a bunch over the past 3 years. She had not been here since July of 21. We're really excited to host her. First time that she was visiting me since some dude and his dog moved into the house. And so it was great to have her. Really nice to have a last couple days off in August before football. And honestly, my last couple days off, my last couple shows off until November, unless something changes drastically. But yeah, it's about to be go time for the NFL season and college football as well, which kicks off a week earlier. So for that reason, it was great to have mom and just be able to be on the same schedule as her. And we really enjoyed our time shopping, eating. We looked for Italian food in a local farmer's market. She really enjoyed going through the Italian deli. We had a bunch of just kind of random fun little things that we did. We found a deli in the next town over that she wanted to try. Oh, gosh. I'll tell you about this experience more as we head through the show. But I took her, well, we took her on date night with us, because why not? Date night with mom sounds like a lot of fun. I wouldn't have said the same, say, 2 years ago, but now it's terrific. We did the same for his mom when she was visiting. Anyway, we did date night to the New Jersey Symphony Orchestra, and it was a really unique experience. My first time ever seeing The Godfather. So I will explain coming up a little later in the show. And we also had an enjoyable time on Saturday evening going out to dinner for, again, what was supposed to be a date night. But when mom decided she was coming to visit, we included her and some friends, actually. It was our 8-month anniversary dinner. So we enjoyed being out in a party of five. That was fun. And then today, Sunday, after going to church in the morning and then having a quick lunch, we took mom to Newark Airport. Now, if you have been paying attention to the news, whether you're in the Northeast or not, if you've been paying attention to the news, you may know that this latest round of storms wreaked havoc with air travel, as it is wont to do. And unfortunately, after we dropped mom off at the airport around 2 Eastern time this afternoon, she gets on her flight. In fact, the entire flight is full. All of their luggage, all of their carry-ons, everybody in place. They back up. I believe she said they backed up and were then parked for a little bit because the severe weather was rolling in. Newark Airport was trying to prioritize other flights to get them out. And another flight got out right next to her, but they were actually pointed back to the gate, and they rolled out the steps again and actually made them deplane. So they all, after getting on the plane and getting settled, they sat there for a few minutes and then had to get back off the plane. And from that point, it was just one big delay after another. Of course, United can do nothing about the weather, and you certainly would rather be safe than be sorry. And the more that lasts, the longer it stretches on, the more flights are delayed, the more of a backlog and a traffic jam it becomes. And it wasn't just at Newark Airport in New Jersey. It was also a lot of the other area airports. And I know many people are frustrated. Finally, around 7 o'clock, she gave up. She'd been at the airport for 5 hours. There were still no feasible updates. So the flight crew was there, but she hadn't seen them in a while. They'd walked up and then they were kind of hiding behind a partition. So she hadn't seen them. The board at her gate still indicated the flight was taking off at 7:45, even though no one had boarded. They hadn't even started the boarding process. And the last we knew, because her husband was paying attention, the flight wasn't scheduled to leave until almost 1 o'clock Eastern time, which would put them in Houston at 3 o'clock Central time. And so but at this point, she'd given up. Her husband rebooked her. And my husband had to go get her in a monsoon. Reason 8,962 why I love my husband. He happily got back in his truck, drove to Newark Airport in a thunderstorm and veritable monsoon. He said he wasn't going more than 25 miles per hour, retrieved mom, and then drove back in the same type of weather with mom in tow. I had to stay behind and work prep. I really wanted to go, but I wasn't sure how long it was going to take the trip there and back. And so I needed to work prep. They both said to stay put and get my work done. And I felt so bad, but he's amazing. And mom is amazing. And now they're both home, I hope, sleeping. So thankful for him, thankful that they're safe, and glad that she was able to rebook on a Monday evening flight. So one more day with mom, as it turns out. I haven't posted any photos yet, but we did take a couple of photos, which is sweet. So maybe at some point I'll get to them. It was a busy 4 days, but it was a lot of fun to have her around. And now I get bonus day with mom, though I am back with you. Online at A-Law Radio, And then our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. I did post a couple times while I was away, but not a lot. I really did want to spend some time with family and enjoy these last couple summer days. Bunch of yard work. That was something else very exciting. We played some cards. We worked on a puzzle. We ate cheesecake. We went to Dairy Queen. We did enjoy having mom around. And I hope you all enjoyed your weekend, your long weekend, your vacation. I know a lot of people are headed out for their final summer break. My kiddos on Sunday morning at church, we were kind of doing a poll. I do this whenever I'm with them. How many people have been in a pool this summer? How many people have been to the beach this summer? How many people have been on a boat? How many people have been out of state? How many people have been on an airplane? And it's kind of fun to see them and hear them get all excited. And so many of them are still in the throes of summer and have vacation plans with their families coming up. But I know a lot of kids, especially in the South and the Southwest, even some in the Midwest, are already back in school. And so some families are on a completely different schedule. But here we are, and we're in the second half of August. And we're just weeks away from not just college football, but the NFL kicking off and life getting back into a school year routine, if you will. So I hope that you're enjoying the last bit of summer. Even if your kids or you're already back into a school routine, the weekends are terrific for a little time with family or friends and food and fun. Our phone number, 855-212-4227. And again, online at A-Law Radio, also on our Facebook page. Now, it was a tough few days for Minnesota Vikings fans, who had been all excited about the prospect of their new franchise quarterback, J.J. McCarthy, continuing to develop, getting closer to taking over as their franchise guy and leading them, maybe not directly to the playoffs, it's like Monopoly, directly, you go to jail, you do not pass go, you do not collect your $200. Maybe it feels more like that now for Vikings fans, because JJ, I was blown away by this, is done for the year. The surgery that he was scheduled to have went forward, but doctors found out that it was a torn meniscus that maybe didn't require him to miss an entire season, but with the repair, they decided better to let him fully heal. But still, I would say a sucker punch for Vikings fans who are really excited about maybe seeing J.J. McCarthy earlier rather than later in 2024. Were those hopes realistic? I don't know. How quickly would J.J. have been on the field? That's another question. But by him being sidelined for this knee injury and being unable to even practice or work with the team the rest of the preseason and on through the regular season, even as the backup to Sam Darnold, well, that definitely sets his development back at least a year. So it's unfortunate for J.J., but also, I can understand the shock of Vikings fans. What does this mean for the offense as a whole? Plus, we know the Jordan Addison injury and potentially a suspension for him. What does this mean now for Justin Jefferson, one of the best receivers in the NFL, who just signed a fat, P-H-A-T, contract in early June to remain with the Vikings? And now is going from a seasoned quarterback who can certainly chuck the ball, with whom he had a rapport in Kirk Cousins, to a Sam Darnold, maybe a J.J. McCarthy down the road. Is it Nick Mullins? What if Sam gets hurt, or what if Sam doesn't work out? And so there are a lot of questions, even more so, without having J.J. McCarthy, again, because they can't continue his development in the hopes that they might put him out there at some point during his rookie year. And so the impact on Justin Jefferson, for me, is a big question. But also, how do they manage in the NFC North? And gosh, who is the best quarterback in the NFC North? That's a good question too, right? Is anybody ready to jump ship and get to, say, Jordan Love over at Jared Goff and Caleb Williams, who continues to impress? But in the NFC North, which one of these is not like the other? That's kind of the question now when it comes to the Vikings. So at the top of next hour, from Los Angeles, Luke Braun, the insider and host of Locked On Vikings, will join us and we'll talk about his reaction to J.J. McCarthy. And I'll ask him about Justin Jefferson, the other J.J. Plus, in general, the NFC North and how the Vikings measure up, if at all. And so there's plenty of preseason football to talk about, even though this rookie quarterback will not play in 2024. Plus, Caitlin Clark and the Indiana Fever. I should never have doubted it. All the rage again, coming back from what was an extended break for the Olympics. And we've already talked about that, why I think it was actually better for Caitlin, as much as she would have enjoyed the Olympic experience, and as much as I look forward to seeing her wearing red, white, and blue. In this case, it was her first extended break since she started basketball for her last year at Iowa. Now, having played college basketball myself, I can tell you, even when you're not in season, you're still required to go through individual workouts. There are times when you have to be in the gym, whether it's with coaches or without. But preseason starts in October. So in October of 2023, she was already gearing up for what was an historic season with the Iowa Hawkeyes in the wake of having made the Final Four earlier in 23 and all the attention that was now focused on them. Going forward with all the excitement, all of the attention, all of the expectation that they could get back to a Final Four, the nationally televised games, Caitlin Clark having to be the center of that storm. And what did Dawn Staley tell us at the Final Four? She carried that heavy load and she did it well. And all of women's basketball owes her a thank you, a debt. I'm paraphrasing. So that's when this whole storm really amped up. Started last fall, October 23, and it continued through her season, only got louder and louder and more intense and more under scrutiny. Every single game on national TV that would set viewership records, that continued through the winter, on into the spring, to another Final Four with a crescendo of energy and excitement. And then a week after the Final Four, the national championship game, she's already getting drafted number one overall. Then it's the awards circuit. It's starting to work with corporate partners, putting ads together, right? I mean, someone's got to film the footage that they use for, say, a Nike commercial or a Gatorade commercial or whatever else. So she's got those commitments as well to earn the millions of dollars she's making in endorsements. And then boom, right into the WNBA preseason. Within a month of getting drafted, she was already playing in professional basketball games that counted. And as people remember, it was a bit of a slower start for Caitlin. Not to mention getting used to new teammates, but also maybe some fatigue coming off of just the crazy, hectic, chaotic pace that was her life around the end of her college basketball career and getting drafted. No surprise at all that after a few weeks without games, without being in the spotlight as much, she went to Mexico for a trip with her boyfriend. She was in New York. If you remember, we talked about her being at Yankee Stadium, but she was there for some work, some other commitments. Of course, practicing, of course, working out, but just having a chance to see her family, spend time with loved ones, get away from the spotlight for the most part. And man, you can tell it did her good, and it certainly has done the Fever good. And so we'll get into Caitlin and the fever and back-to-back wins. And yeah, fever is still a real thing. The 3 weeks off did not temper the enthusiasm of fans in Indiana and around the country. I even have friends who are posting photos of themselves on social. First Indiana fever game. Not even huge basketball fans. Just how can you not be a fan of Caitlin Clark and the fever right now? And how can you not catch that fever when people get so excited to see her play? But as we begin our next segment following the break, another watershed moment for Major League Baseball. I will give credit where credit is due. There are a lot of things that I don't love about Rob Manfred's leadership. There are a lot of ways that I feel like he makes his commissioner's job more complicated than it needs to be. And there are times where I get frustrated because I think he can't get out of his own way, but baseball can't get out of its own way. But after seeing baseball in the cornfield in Iowa at the Field of Dreams, and what a cool, nostalgic backdrop that was in the dog days of summer, baseball has hit a home run again, if you will, with the Little League World Series Classic. And really neat to see the Yankees and Tigers and hundreds of Little Leaguers and their families on hand in Williamsport, Pennsylvania. Online at A-Law Radio. Also on our Facebook page. Good to connect with you. Thanks so much for hanging out. Always nice to know when I am missed. Now, one more thing before we get to our break. We have a major announcement coming up at the top of our final hour for sure. And I'll drop it in at some point, maybe next hour too, about the new producer of After Hours. A decision has been made. I'm excited, although I'm getting a little nervous because we're getting so close to football season. But this was a big step. Thanks for hanging out with us on a Sunday night as we usher in a new work week or a new summer week. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
The screen finds some space and delivers. It's a triple for Caitlin Clark.
Miss there for Lloyd. Clark the fling ahead. Oh, what a dive! And Mitchell lays it in. And Caitlin Clark officially has the most assists ever for a rookie in this league's history.
Here's Amy Lawrence.
What? Here is Amy Lawrence. Is it wrong and false advertising when the voice god says it's After Hours with Amy Lawrence and it turns out to be a guy's voice? Sorry about that. I don't think they've ever had a female fill-in, which would be great. But for now, it's a revolving door of guys. And I know some of you like the voices and the hosts who are here when I'm not, and some of you don't. I have no control over it. I don't even know who they put in the seat when I'm gone because I need to disconnect and not care. I can't be attached to the shows that have nothing to do with me, especially since I can barely keep up with the shows that have to do with me. But I'm glad that you missed me, and I'm always glad to come back. It gives me kind of a renewed energy when I get some time away. And I think that's exactly what happened for Caitlin Clark. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. The highlights there on ABC from back-to-back wins to begin this second half, if you will, of the WNBA regular season. We've already seen the New York Liberty clinch a playoff spot. And so that's why you're hearing this talk of the Fever inching ever closer to their own postseason berth. And if you remember what was the general narrative from the Fever at the beginning of the year. It was, we've got to find our strides. We've got to get to the point where we know each other. We need some practice time. We need to be able to work together in a gym under this, well, without, I should say, without opposing defenses, without officials. Just, we need to work together. We need to know each other. That's one thing. We need to be able to practice. We need to be able to put in our plays. But another piece of that is we just need reps. And they have a lot of young talent, top two being Caitlin Clark and Aaliyah Boston in their first 2 years as pro players. And just the idea that you have a point guard who now has to figure out all the various targets and teammates that she runs with so that she knows where they like the ball, when they like the ball, and so that they're trained to be ready for the ball. Have you noticed that with the Fever? Now you've got at least one teammate breaking every single time there's a rebound. You've got teammates that are streaking down the other end of the court. Why? Well, because they know now to expect that Caitlin is going to be looking for them. Heads up, ready to make a full court pass, right? Once you have a point guard who is consistently doing that, it's amazing because then you have teammates who are conditioned and trained to be ready for the ball at any time. A little bit like playing with Patrick Mahomes. You may know what the play calls for, but if the play breaks down, Mahomes, as is evidenced by the behind-the-back pass in the Chiefs' second preseason game, Mahomes is able to improvise. He's able to find his weapons and find his targets even when the defense takes away option one, option two, option three, even when the defense is trying to force him to move quickly, more quickly than he wants to. Now, Patrick Mahomes, as an incredible point guard, right? Point guard in a quarterback's body, because that's what they are, he is able to find the open man. The receivers, the tight ends, even the running backs, they just need to get open and he will find them. And that's what's happening with Caitlin Clark. So in back-to-back games, 20 points as well as a bunch of assists against the Seattle Storm. You hear the second call there. She finishes with 9 assists to go along with the 23 points. And by doing so, she breaks the WNBA's rookie assist record, meaning no player has ever had more assists in her rookie season than what Caitlin Clark has amassed to this point. She's already at 232. And she's still got a bunch of games to go. We'd seen her set the new assist record for a single game, rookie or veteran. That happened just before the break. And now, with her 232 assists, she's bypassed the previous rookie record for assists in a season that was held by Tisha Pinachero going back to 1998. So not long after the WNBA was created, not long after the league launched, as it's getting closer to its 30-year anniversary. Now, she cares mostly about the wins, but yes, Holly Rowe on ESPN asked her about this assist record.
Tisha's been a big fan of mine ever since I was in college and somebody that has always been right there to congratulate me or just be somebody that's offered advice. So to pass somebody like her, I'm just forever thankful that she's been such a legend in our game. But it's super cool, but hopefully there's a lot more of those.
Yeah, I can imagine there will be a lot more of those. So Caitlin still on court there following a second straight win after the break. Now in this one, Kelsey Mitchell finished with 27 points and a handful of steals, but mostly the highlight there is that she's on the receiving end of a lot of these Caitlin Clark passes. She and Aaliyah Boston, and Kelsey is benefiting. She's one of the teammates who's benefiting from Caitlin's passing abilities. And so it's kind of neat to hear Caitlin, as well as her coach, who's been encouraging this connection, to hear them talk about what's developing with Kelsey Mitchell.
Yeah, I think we've gotten a lot better just like understanding each other as we're playing the game, sure. Looking for each other when each other's hot. Like Kels got hot there, made a few in a row. So you're just looking to find her. I think in transition, especially the way she runs the floor with her speed, I've always got my eyes up trying to look to find her. And I think she can tell like when I want her to go back door, when I want her to come cut off the ball or anything like that. And just that chemistry that you get used to playing with one another, it's taken time, but I think we're really starting to get it down.
Kaylin had a couple possessions where she knew when Kelsey was hot. You know, she didn't even need me to call what we were going to run in a dead ball situation. She went right to something that we have in for Kelsey. That's just growth, but it's just, you know, these guys getting to know each other and trusting each other.
You know what's really interesting is to hear Christy Sides talk about her plan for handing responsibilities, play calling duties, but also the freedom and autonomy to Caitlin Clark, who as a point guard is an extension of the coach on the court. You may remember all of the criticism of Christy Sides initially. Now, there's plenty of criticism that was leveled at Caitlin, leveled at her teammates, leveled at officials, blah, 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 leveled at other teams for why the Fever were not succeeding early on. And what Christy Sides kept saying is, it's a process. We need some practice time. We barely had any time together in the gym since the season began, blah, 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 blah. They did start to figure it out. They put a bunch of wins together. They got right side up, if you will. And now you're seeing the benefit of the way that she has taught and coached Caitlin Clark to be a point guard with some ability on the court to make up her own mind. When we talk about veteran quarterbacks on the football field, we know that many of them, when they've reached elite status or next level status, where they have the trust of their coaches, it's because they're allowed to audible at the line. They're allowed to decide what play they want to call, or at the very least, what they want to do in their progressions. There's a lot more freedom that's handed to them from the coach and the offensive coordinator. Well, listen to Christy Sides talk about how she has set up Caitlin. Even though it may have been tough with a lot more turnovers at the beginning of the season, Christy had a plan for giving Caitlin this ability to determine what worked best on the court. So again, to be an extension of the coach out there on the court as point guard.
I really wanted her to empower her teammates. I really wanted her to do a lot of talking to her teammates. So there was a lot of times, whether it was drills or running certain offenses, I would tell her and only her, so she would be able to get out and tell the players, you know, what we were running or where to go. I would throw some things out there with some sets that we haven't run. So she had to think it through and put people in the right position.
How about that? Smart coaching idea, smart coaching strategy from Christy Sides and her staff. And wow, has it worked. I know a lot of people expected that Caitlin Clark would tear up the WNBA with her shooting. How many times I heard, oh, she's just someone who can shoot the three. Huh. I bet Steph Curry heard that a lot too when he first got into the NBA. No, in fact, Caitlin is tearing up the league with her passing abilities. That's how she's making an impact. And it's dazzling. It's just as dazzling as the logo threes, which she can still shoot now and then. But even when she doesn't have that rhythm and the shots are not dropping and her teammates are the ones who are spearheading the scoring, she is the distributor. And Christy Sides has put her in that position where she is making choices. She is making decisions. And how about that? Christy trusting her point guard to make the smart choice. And early on, you know, the defenses were locked in. She was still adjusting, and there were more turnovers. But those have steadily come down, and the assists have gone up as she's gotten more comfortable, not just with her teammates, but with the speed of the game and with the coaching system. Man, that happens in every sport. It's necessary in every sport for great players to go through that. It's a lot of fun to watch now, and of course, still sold-out crowds when the Fever are home and even on the road. Coming up, Yankees and Tigers were both on the road in Williamsport, Pennsylvania. A ballpark that seats 2,300. How refreshing. What a cool atmosphere. I hope you enjoyed the Little League World Series Classic. I certainly did. And you'll hear from the Yankees and Tigers, including Aaron Judge, who got his start in Little League in California. Thanks for hanging out with us online at A-Law Radio. Also on our Facebook page, it's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
Volpe is a ghost runner. He leads off second to start the 10th. LeMahieu grounds it right side of the infield. Squeaks through a base hit. Volpe races around third. Center fielder Meadows won't throw it in. It's an RBI single for DJ LeMahieu. And the Yankees take a 2-1 lead in the 10th.
The pitch, swinging line drive.
Base hit in the left. McKinstry's being waved around third. Dominguez has a big arm, a hesitation, a throw home. Not in time. Tigers win. Zach McKinstry delivers the tying run with a single, scores the winning run on a Parker Meadows. Base hit in the left. The Tigers walk it off in the Little League Classic.
Here's Amy Lawrence.
A lot of excitement in Williamsport, Pennsylvania, as you hear a back-and-forth affair between the Yankees and the Tigers. Ultimately, a Parker Meadows walk-off in the 10th. So there's bonus baseball for the young athletes and their families who were crowded into Bowman Field. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Remember, we'd already seen the tribute to the Negro Leagues taking place in Birmingham, Alabama. Of course, last couple years, we got baseball in a cornfield in Iowa, the Field of Dreams, and now we get another nostalgic slash cool opportunity for not just the teams themselves, but for the little kids who look up to these baseball players and helps to grow the game, to be sure. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. You can find me online at A-Law Radio as well as on our Facebook page. Our phone number, 855-212-4227. We'll get to some football. Top of the hour, the Vikings lose J.J. McCarthy. What does this mean for Justin Jefferson? That's my major question. And how long should a Vikings rebuild take? Does it get set back now because they don't have their rookie quarterback who can work with them through the rest of this season? So a lot of questions we'll ask Luke Braun when he joins us in just a few moments here on the show. The Detroit Tigers, kind of a perfect team to play in this Little League World Series Classic because they are one of the youngest teams in Major League Baseball. As the lineups, the starting lineups were getting introduced, I was wondering, as I'm seeing some of these different Tigers walk out there, wondering how many people can name outside of Detroit, can name three or four of the starters in the lineup. Now, a lot of people know about Tarek Skubal because he is a likely Cy Young Award winner. And that's pretty impressive, too, for a team that's still below 500. But what he has done really can't be underestimated, or I should say overestimated or overvalued. But then you watch these guys play, and so many of them are young. Now, they're not little leaguers, of course, but A.J. Hinch has a youth movement on his own roster, so it's kind of neat for them to connect with the young kids in Williamsport.
Development's continuing at this level. We believe in these guys. We've believed in these guys, you know, from the beginning, and I love the maturation of Colt Keith in the big leagues to match the development of Jace and Trey and Parker, you know, going up and down, Torque going up and down. This is a fun group to manage because they believe and so do I.
So A.J. Hinch, remember him banished by baseball and fired by the Houston Astros in the wake of their World Series, well, their World Series season and the trash can sign-stealing mess. And he did admit that he knew about it he wasn't a part of it, but he never put a stop to it. And his leadership, of course, was one of the reasons, or his lack of leadership was one of the reasons why it continued rampantly throughout that 2017 season. So now he's found new life with the Tigers. And while it's been a slow burn, having Tarek Skubal certainly helps. The final line for him against the Yankees, he did not factor in the decision, of course, because it was a walk-off in the 10th inning. But Skubal, with six innings pitched, allows just a single run on three hits. He did have four walks in there, as well as five strikeouts. But to have him as their stopper every fifth day is one of the reasons the Tigers are flirting with 500.
You know, I think it's important for us to be very aware, which we are. And it's also important for us to watch what he's doing. You know, I mean, he's a guy who works tremendously hard. He's put himself in a really good position. He has an incredible routine. He has stuck to it.
Yeah, and he did have success against the top of that Yankees order. Aaron Judge had a hit, but also struck out a couple times. Gleyber Torres, same thing, struck out a couple times. Juan Soto goes 0 for 3. So really the only one of the top four that had any success against him was Giancarlo Stanton, who is hit or miss, of course. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. What about the experience of playing in front of a small but very exuberant Little League crowd in Williamsport, PA?
Yeah, I mean, it was an incredible day in all facets. I mean, we get here early. Everybody enjoyed it. We go over, hang out with the kids, come over. Work's interrupted with the rain, but we know we're going to play. And then it was a really well-played game, I think, on both sides. Well-pitched games, certainly.
Definitely. You know, I wish we got to spend more time with the kids and hang out with them. You know, we kind of got rushed around a little bit. But, you know, the moments we did get to spend with them and get to talk with them and just – really just answer questions, have some fun with them, ask them questions about how they're doing, how are they enjoying this experience out here. That for me was definitely the best part.
Aaron Judge there, and his parents actually were honored as the Little League World Series Parents of the Year, which I thought was neat. Just because of his success and knowing that he got to start in Little League in California, he's raved about that experience and how much it encouraged his love for the game. And now look at him, one of baseball's biggest stars. If you're wondering, in 2025, the Mariners and the Mets will do battle in Williamsport, Pennsylvania. But I loved it. I love the fact that there was a kids cast as an alternate broadcast with some teenagers, including a 13-year-old who, I think her name was Pepper, who was doing the sideline reporting and interviews with the players. I love the fact that it's a tiny, intimate ballpark and that these major leaguers were there to watch the kids play earlier in the day. They were rolling down the hill with them. That iconic scene that you see in Williamsport so often after Little League teams win and celebrate, and then they're looking for ice cream, right? I've never loved the fact that World Series games, Little League World Series games are on TV. I think that commercializes the kids a little bit too much, but it certainly has become a rite of passage and a goal for a lot of these teams. All right, we'll talk Vikings next. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
Volpe is a ghost runner. He leads off second to start the 10th. LeMahieu grounds it right side of the infield. Squeaks through a base hit. Volpe races around third. Center fielder Meadows won't throw it in. It's an RBI single for DJ LeMahieu. And the Yankees take a 2-1 lead in the 10th.
The pitch, swinging line drive.
Base hit in the left. McKinstry's being waved around third. Dominguez has a big arm. A hesitation. The throw home. Not in time. Tigers win. Zach McKinstry delivers the tying run with a single. Scores the winning run on a Parker Meadows. Base hit in the left. The Tigers walk it off in the Little League Classic.
Here's Amy Lawrence.
A lot of excitement in Williamsport, Pennsylvania, as you hear a back-and-forth affair between the Yankees and the Tigers. Ultimately, a Parker Meadows walk-off in the 10th. So there's bonus baseball for the young athletes and their families who are crowded into Bowman Field. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Remember, we'd already seen the tribute to the Negro Leagues taking place in Birmingham, Alabama. Of course, last couple years, we got baseball in a cornfield in Iowa, the Field of Dreams, and now we get another nostalgic slash cool opportunity for not just the teams themselves, but for the little kids who look up to these baseball players and helps to grow the game, to be sure. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. You can find me online at A-Law Radio as well as on our Facebook page. Our phone number, 855-212-4227. We'll get to some football top of the hour. The Vikings lose J.J. McCarthy. What does this mean for Justin Jefferson? That's my major question. And how long should a Vikings rebuild take? Does it get set back now because they don't have their rookie quarterback who can work with them through the rest of this season? So a lot of questions we'll ask Luke Braun when he joins us in just a few moments here on the show. The Detroit Tigers, kind of a perfect team to play in this Little League World Series Classic because they are one of the youngest teams in Major League Baseball. As the lineups, the starting lineups were getting introduced, I was wondering, as I'm seeing some of these different Tigers walk out there, wondering how many people can name outside of Detroit, can name three or four of the starters in the lineup. Now, a lot of people know about Tarek Skubal because he is a likely Cy Young Award winner. And that's pretty impressive, too, for a team that's still below 500. But what he has done really can't be underestimated, or I should say overestimated or overvalued. But then you watch these guys play, and so many of them are young. Now, they're not little leaguers, of course, but A.J. Hinch has a youth movement on his own roster, so it's kind of neat for them to connect with the young kids in Williamsport.
Development's continuing at this level. We believe in these guys. We've believed in these guys, you know, from the beginning, and I love the maturation of Cole Keith in the big leagues to match the development of Jace and Trey and Parker, you know, going up and down, Torque going up and down. This is a fun group to manage because they believe and so do I.
So A.J. Hinch, remember him banished by baseball and fired by the Houston Astros in the wake of their World Series, well, their World Series season and the trash can sign-stealing mess. And he did admit that he knew about it. He wasn't a part of it, but he never put a stop to it. And his leadership, of course, was one of the reasons, or his lack of leadership was one of the reasons why it continued rampantly throughout that 2017 season. So now he's found new life with the Tigers. And while it's been a slow burn, having Tarek Skubal certainly helps. The final line for him against the Yankees, he did not factor in the decision, of course, because it was a walk-off in the 10th inning. But Skubal, with six innings pitched, allows just a single run on three hits. He did have four walks in there, as well as five strikeouts. But to have him as their stopper every fifth day is one of the reasons the Tigers are flirting with 500.
You know, I think it's important for us to be very aware, which we are, and it's also important for us to watch what he's doing. You know, I mean, he's a guy who works tremendously hard. He's put himself in a really good position. He has an incredible routine. He has stuck to it.
Yeah, and he did have success against the top of that Yankees order. Aaron Judge had a hit, but also struck out a couple times. Gleyber Torres, same thing, struck out a couple times. Juan Soto goes 0 for 3. So really the only one of the top four that had any success against him was Giancarlo Stanton, who is hit or miss, of course. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. What about the experience of playing in front of a small but very exuberant Little League crowd in Williamsport, PA?
Yeah, I mean, it was an incredible day in all facets. I mean, we get here early. Everybody enjoyed it. We go over, hang out with the kids, come over. Work's interrupted with the rain, but we know we're going to play. And then it was a really well-played game, I think, on both sides. Well-pitched games, certainly.
Definitely, you know, I wish we got to spend more time with the kids and hang out with them. You know, we kind of got rushed around a little bit, but, you know, the moments we did get to spend with them and get to talk with them and just really just answer questions, have some fun with them, ask them questions about how they're doing, how are they enjoying this experience out here. That for me was definitely the best part.
Aaron Judge there, and his parents actually were honored as the Little League World Series Parents of the Year, which I thought was neat. Just because of his success and knowing that he got to start in Little League in California, he's raved about that experience and how much it encouraged his love for the game. And now look at him, one of baseball's biggest stars. If you're wondering, in 2025, the Mariners and the Mets will do battle in Williamsport, Pennsylvania. But I loved it. I love the fact that there was a kids cast as an alternate broadcast with some teenagers, including a 13-year-old who I think her name was Pepper, who was doing the sideline reporting and interviews with the players. I love the fact that it's a tiny, intimate ballpark and that these major leaguers were there to watch the kids play earlier in the day. They were rolling down the hill with them. That iconic scene that you see in Williamsport so often after Little League teams win and celebrate, and then they're looking for ice cream, right? I've never loved the fact that World Series games, Little League World Series games are on TV. I think that commercializes the kids a little bit too much, but it certainly has become a rite of passage and a goal for a lot of these teams. All right, we'll talk Vikings next. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.